control of lose control of yourself. I've got one that I've seen. My son plays baseball. Ever been to athletics, sports events? And I'll just say right now that people wearing stripes or blue shirts, that's not camouflage so that God can't see what's happening. Okay? You ever seen fans watching and just dog and just go after the umpire for refs? Just lose control and just totally assault them. What we're talking about is adding to our knowledge self-control. Self-control, controlling self, maintaining discipline. Now, how silly is whatever knowledge that you might possess and may be able to help people or teach people, how silly is that? And it will appear that way if you cannot maintain control of yourself. Nobody's going to listen to you. Your reputation will be shot because they'll know you as whatever, you know, as losing control. There's a lot of ways, a lot of things that self-control affects. Language, our desires, many things that come into play here. And Eric mentioned in the first lesson yesterday that our soul is at stake. That our soul is hanging in the balance. And it really is. And with a lack of self-control, the balance is teetering in the wrong direction. Okay? And I want to talk about self-control as being a personal battle. This is something that, when it comes down to it, we can talk about it all day long. We can discuss it. We can look at various aspects of it. But it comes down to a personal battle. It comes down to the determination that you have in your heart and your soul and how you're going to conquer this. Is self-control natural? Think about a baby. How much control do they have? None whatsoever. Right? I mean, anything that goes wrong, you know, they're hollering. Right? Self-control has to be developed. Okay? And I'm going to give you three words. If you remember nothing else, remember these three words. Develop good habits. Develop good habits. Okay? Because things will happen, situations will occur when it's your reaction, that split second reaction, that reveals who you really are. And if you have developed this self-control. Right? You can think about that. Some of you work in construction or have jobs in the summertime. Hammer on the thumb. Blood starts spurting out. It's a quick, immediate, no thinking whatsoever about it. What comes out of your mouth? If you haven't developed good habits, then the wrong thing may come out. And you'll be praying and asking forgiveness. That's the good thing about God's grace and mercy, is that self-control, there's going to be a whole lot of battles in our lifetime. Right? There's going to be an awful lot of times when we can demonstrate self-control or a lack of it. You think you're going to win all of them? No. We will make mistakes. But it's God who has provided us a way through His Son to help us. Because we're not perfect. We will sin. Okay. Now, this battle, it is a personal battle, and it's going to be won or lost based on your actions. It's not something that we can avoid. You can't hand it off. Our parents really can't help so much other than to talk about it and help train. And train to do what? Develop good habits, right? Okay? Those will help going a long way. Now, in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, verse 25 and 27, there's our first example. We're going to use two examples as we go through this. This is the first one. In verse 25, it says, "Everyone who competes in games exercises self-control in all things." If you're going to compete, and you think about an athlete who's at the top of his or her game, how much self-control, how much self-discipline does it take to become number one? To become a Roger Federer? To become a Tiger Woods? How much self-control and self-discipline does it take to do that? Now, I'm not saying that's not, you know, to reach that. Perfection is always our goal, but to get there, you know, we're going to fall short. God's told us that. He knows that. He knows us. But with self-control, that is our goal is perfection. We want to shoot for 100% in maintaining ourselves, in discipline, in our actions, in our thoughts, in all of that. But what it comes down to overcome, to win these battles, is going to come down to my determination. It's going to come down to my willpower, how much willpower I have. Right? As a society, how much willpower do we have? How many billions of as a society in America, how many billions are spent on weight loss? Right? Self-control. Now, there may be some other things involved with that, but self-control. All right. So, our motivation, our determination, where does that come from? What is it that we can find to motivate us to do this? Because it's not easy. It takes time to develop habits that will help us in controlling ourselves. What is going to motivate us? Well, let me suggest a couple of things that will help us from which we can draw encouragement, strength, and the ability to overcome. The absolute best source of encouragement for this is Jesus Christ Himself. When you think about the self-control that He manifested throughout His entire life, but specifically when it comes to His death on the cross. Now, in thinking about this, there are a lot of people who have given their lives for a good cause. We can think of those who died for freedom. We can think of Christians, perhaps who have died, who are persecuted for their belief. But in every one of those situations, if those individuals could have prevented whatever was happening, such as a soldier thinking about him sacrificing himself for others around him, team members, sacrificing himself for them. If he could have saved them and saved himself, do you think he would choose to do that? Sure. Absolutely. Christians who are persecuted, if they could continue to stand and demonstrate Christ and stand up for Him and still save their life, would they have done that? Probably so. But Jesus Christ, when He died, He had that choice. He could have saved himself, but he chose not to for the sake of all of us. Self-control and self-discipline. He manifested the ultimate in that. I also want to suggest that we can draw encouragement in this from the fact that the relationship, once we enter into the relationship with Jesus Christ and God our Father, that relationship, there's nothing that can tear us apart from that. Okay? Nothing can tear us apart from that. Not tribulations, not wars, not famines, the list in Romans chapter 8. nothing can tear us apart from that. Unless, like Eric said in that first lesson, unless we and our emotions and our lack of faith, we leave Him. We leave Jesus. We can also draw encouragement and help through our brothers and sisters in Christ, from each other. Confess our trespasses one to another. We all have this struggle, this battle. We can draw encouragement from each other, but it does come down to me and my determination, my motivation, and how I approach this. Jesus is going to be, or the two examples that we're going to look at is Jesus and an athlete who motivates an awful lot of discipline and self-control. So the question is, what will it take? What's it going to take to be in control, to maintain control of ourselves in our lives? The first one I'm going to suggest is a total commitment. Whatever it takes, whatever the price, whatever the sacrifice, I am totally committed to this goal. Based on our faith, based on the evidence that we've gained, that we've looked at the evidence, based and we've building on our the foundation of the faith, I believe it, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to follow Jesus. I'm going to conquer the desires. I'm going to be in control of myself. It is a battle of the mind. There are urges, there's desires, there are things, but it is the mind over our body. That's what we've got to develop. Every thought, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5, it says, nevertheless, 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5, the last part of it, we're taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. We're going to bring everything, all thoughts, captive. Isaiah chapter 64 talks about us being clay in the potter's hands, letting God mold our lives. Part of this self-control and self-discipline is the ability to not be selfish, is to put my life, submit my life into another's hands, into God's hands, and let Him mold us and make us after His image. If you think about an athlete's success or failure, how much commitment is involved, right, to reach maybe that level that we're talking about? He's going to get up earlier. He's going to stay later. He's going to practice harder. There's going to be time involved. There's going to be tons of effort. He's going to eat it, sleep it, dream about it. Everything. He's going to be totally committed to the effort. And when we think about an athlete, you know, that's a perishable thing, right? All this work. In fact, spend a lifetime working toward a single goal. And to me, it's just, it's a little, it would seem a little frustrating to me, I guess might be the word. You think about track and field, sprinter. Fastest man in the world. That's what his goal is. The top athlete. His name right now is Usain Bolt. He's from Jamaica. How much time and effort and commitment has it been? And for what? Less than 10 seconds. He can run the 100 meter in 9.72, I think is the record right now. A lot of commitment, a lot of time, a lifetime of effort, right? For a perishable crown. What we're talking about, not perishable. What we're talking about is a lifetime of development and discipline of ourselves for the ultimate goal, the ultimate prize. And that's eternal life with our God. Is there any doubt in the level of commitment of Jesus Christ? No doubt whatsoever, is it? He gave it all. He gave it all. Another characteristic that will help us in self-control is knowledge of our opponent. So who's our opponent? A co-worker of mine pointed out one time that he was kind of making fun of me, but he said, "My evil Tim would do this." You got a good Tim and an evil Tim. You think, and we've seen that. That's actually been made fun of most of the time. Whenever you see that, right? Good Tim and evil Tim. What is that? That's our conscience working, right? And we're warring against, you know, what we want to do and what we should do. And that's usually, anytime we see that in print or in media, they're making fun of that. And usually it goes the wrong way, doesn't it? Right? But that is the struggle. That is the struggle in our minds of overcoming our desires. But knowing myself, knowing what my weaknesses are, being honest about that, and being wary of that, preparing for that, how I react or act in various situations. Take an athlete. If a pitcher knows, pitcher pitching to the batter, and he knows this batter, they've got the scout reports on him, and he knows he likes them high and tight, high and inside. Where's the pitcher going to try to keep that? Where's he going to pitch that ball? Where's he going to throw? Somewhere else, right? He's going to keep it away from that guy's sweet spot. He's going to put it somewhere else. If I know that something tempts me, maybe it's whatever it is, alcohol. If that is tempting to me, where am I going to be? Somewhere that's not. I'm going to stay away from that. All right? Knowing your opponent. How well did Jesus know his opponent? In this case, think about Satan as his opponent. How well did he know him? He knew what Satan was going to use to tempt him. He was prepared for that. And that's our next one, preparation. All right? Prepare to be tempted. It's going to happen. And the more you increase in your motivation and your dedication to win this battle and this war, the more Satan is going to try to conquer you and put those things in front of you that will tempt you, that will make you fall. Preparation. Prepare to be tempted. Think about Joseph and David. Compare Joseph. We talked about Joseph already. Think about Joseph and David. Which one of those was prepared more than the other? I always think it's bad. David had such a wonderful life, and then this one event, we always use it as a good example for us, as a bad example. But compare the two of them. Which one was prepared? Joseph, he was prepared. He ran. He fled. He got out of there. David, he stood there. He looked at Bathsheba. He lusted. He kept standing there. He took it to the next step. He sent for her. There was at no point in there did he stop and take control of himself and the situation. He was led by not rational thinking, but what? By emotion, by desire. That's what led him away. It was not a rational thought. What does it take? Look over at Matthew chapter 18, verse 8 and 9. You've read this verse, and I'm sure you know it. If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off, throw it from you. Better for you to enter life crippled or lame than to have two hands or two feet and be cast into eternal fire. What was it that Joseph cut off in order to maintain his virtue? He was no longer head of Potiphar's house. He had, maybe this is a stretch, but as a slave, he had risen to the top he was over the household. I'm sure that came with privileges. He gave that up to go to prison. He cut that out. He was willing to let that go. He was willing to sacrifice that to maintain his purity, to maintain his virtue, to maintain that relationship with God. What about David's attempt? Was David willing to cut anything off, to throw something away? In fact, he kind of did the opposite. In fact, in order to remain whole and to not cut anything off, not only did he sin with Bathsheba, but then he took it to even further in having her husband killed to try to maintain intact and whole. He wasn't willing to cut that off, anything off, and throw it away. Joseph was willing to do that. Self-control. It happens. Things happen. Situations come in an instant. When you're surfing on the internet, and you're on Facebook, surfing around, in an instant, you can be in a place where you don't want to be. Rational thought. If you think about it, this is not what I want to be doing. This is not what I want to be seeing. And you click it off. But what does the desire want? That's interesting. And you take time. Self-control, self-discipline, it needs to be immediate, and you need to be prepared, and you need to know what to do in that situation, in lots of situations. How much time and effort and energy does the athlete put into preparing? How prepared is he? In the case of the 100-meter sprinter, he's preparing for a lifetime, essentially, for years and years, day upon day, hours and hours every day, for less than 10 seconds. That's an awful lot. That's an awful lot for a perishable crown. Now, to put that much effort into something that's our goal, that's worth it, for sure, in my opinion. Jesus prepared for temptation. He prepared for it. When do you think he was nearing the cross, what would have been his temptations? Go the other way. Pull a Jonah. Go the opposite direction, maybe. I don't know. I don't profess to be able to think even at the level of Jesus, but human nature would be, a lot of things would be going through your mind. He spent time doing what? Pray. Meditating. Talking to his Father. He had the same needs and desires that we do. He needed sleep, but he spent the night in prayer. Because that was what was going to prepare him. That was what was going to keep him in a frame of mind that he could do what he needed to do. How much greater is our need for prayer? I don't think any of us can come close to being Jesus. But we can be like him. And if he needed prayer, if he used that to help him overcome and to be in control and discipline, then how much more do we need it? He also prepared for temptation by knowing the Scriptures. Knowledge. We've been talking about that. Right? We're adding to that knowledge self-control. The last one here of these characteristics that will help us. Endurance. Now, I won't spend much time on this because Gary's going to have that next. Perseverance, endurance. But just think about it in this aspect. I don't think I'm stepping on him. But endurance, we're preparing for a lifelong battle here. What's the three words that'll help us in this lifelong? It'll make it so much easier as we get older if we have developed good habits. Okay? If we develop good habits, many things that might have been that might be a problem with us when we're younger won't be as much of a problem, and perhaps we've developed such good habits that those go away even. But we always have to maintain diligence and be on the lookout. Self-control is a constant battle in life. And the only reprieve is that if we can develop habits that are formed from diligent control of ourselves. In 1 Corinthians, we've read the chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 25 and 24 through 27. And he says, the endurance, let's just go over there and read that. Because that is talking about the goal that we have. Verse 24, he begins, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath or crown, but we have an imperishable. Therefore I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way, not beating the air, but I discipline my body, make it slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified." Paul was writing here in the fact that he knew, even talking to others and teaching others, what did he know about self-control and discipline? He had to do it for himself to reach the goal, to reach the prize. We go out and we teach, and we have families and we teach them, and we go out into our communities and the world and we teach and share the message of and gospel of Jesus. If we're lacking in self-control, who's going to miss out? It's going to be me. Paul knew that. He did not want to disqualify himself. All right. And I have a couple of things here that I've wanted to point out with regards to self-control in our spiritual lives. And I haven't even talked about this yet, but I want to talk about it now. And self-control, and I see this, I've seen this happen to young people with a lack of, perhaps, education on the subject, but it affects our spiritual life, and that is financially. Okay? A couple of things I want to point out here, or statistics. When you get into college, how many of you have gotten, in your name, in the mail, a credit card offer? In your name. Right. My son got one when he was 3 years old. Should have signed up for it. All right? These things are going to be bombarded. Debt is going to be an issue that you're going to face. All right? Finances. 3 out of 5 students with credit cards max them out when? Really fast. The tendency is to live on credit. All right? Hey, let's go get a pizza. All right. Not a debit card. Those are different. Credit card. You're using somebody else's money. All right? And the tendency is to live on that. What I want to do is talk to you about it from a spiritual standpoint. The Proverbs talk about it. And in the Proverbs, debt is never talked about favorably. It's not talked about favorably. In fact, I'll just go ahead and skip over there to it. It's in Proverbs 22nd chapter, verse 7. Proverbs 22:7. Does anybody know that? We're going to read it. Proverbs 22, verse 7. The rich rules over the poor. The borrower becomes slave to to the lender. It's not a place we probably want to be in, to be slaves to someone else. When we get into such debt, one of the consequences of that is it limits my options. In my spiritual life, it will limit my options. For example, if I have the goal in my life to go and to preach, to teach, whether that's nearby or far away or wherever, and I want to do that, and if I, straight out of whenever I start to do that, if I've gone to college or not, when I start out on that, if I am ridden with a huge house payment and a car payment, and I still got to pay the bills, the electric, the water, the gas, the whatever, how can I move? I can't afford to move. In other words, so much debt in our lives will limit my ability to make decisions and options to do the things that I might want to do in my spiritual life. Another thing here, we see 75% of students use their student loans to pay off their credit cards. So, about 43% of American families spend more than they earn each year. That's kind of like the government, isn't it? Almost half of the family spend more than they make. How can you do that? Well, it limits our options and our spiritual life. And it causes stress on relationships that, if you can avoid that, number one, cause for divorce. I might need to look at a statistic, but I'll just say it's in my opinion. One of the causes of arguments, I'll put it this way, of arguments, money. All right? How are we going to spend this, spend that? Are we going to get this, get that? What are we going to do? Before you marry, if you can agree on how to use money, it'll save so much friction. All right? So much stress in your life. Personal bankruptcies have doubled in the past decade. All right? What is it about bankruptcy? That is very common in our society. What is that essentially doing? Somebody tell me. Okay, credit, that's right. But when I agree to pay this money to you and I'm going to get this, and I declare bankruptcy, what am I telling that person now? Exactly. I'm not going to pay you now. Legally, I don't have to pay you anymore. You can't come after me. Our credit, yeah, our credit shot. But essentially, I've lied, I've deceived, and I've stolen from them. Right? That's what bankruptcy is. It's just legal. Even if we were to get in such a situation that we can't pay everybody, even if you declared bankruptcy, what would be the Christian obligation to continue doing? When I've got the money, I'm going to pay it. There is none of that in the Christian life. Okay? All right. In financial matters in general, just a couple other points here. In Romans chapter 13, we'll see obligations, financial obligations. We talk about taxes, stealing, such as in bankruptcy, coveting. One of the things about taxes is you can. It's one of those things we think and we can get away with it if we don't do it. But what God says is you do it. Pay whatever you owe to the government. Pay whatever that is. Render unto Caesar what is due Caesar, and unto God what is due God. The other thing, and the last thing we'll look at here, for a well-rounded Christian, we think about self-control and in our spiritual lives, and that is with relationships. Self-control in our relationships, our personal relationships. First of all, with our parents. Children, in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 3, obey your parents. Now, as a guy growing up, one of the things that we want is independence. Right? We want it before we deserve it. And gals, I can't speak for you, but but for guys, all right, you want that independence even before you deserve it, for sure. All right? But independence does not equal rebellion. It's not the same thing. All right? In fact, you're going to get less independence if you show a rebellious attitude. In order to be independent, in order for your parents to grant you that and to give you a longer leash and to let you make some decisions, you're going to have to demonstrate that. That's what independence is about. Self-control, it's the ability to do what you're supposed to do in honoring your responsibilities, discipline, doing what you're supposed to do, right? That's what's going to gain you independence. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, we talk about a list of things when hard times will come. Perilous times, he calls it. Men will be lovers of themselves, of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without what? Self-control, without self-discipline. All of these, and brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. From such people, do what? Stay away from them. It says turn away from them. Keep away from people with those kind of qualities and characteristics. Those who exhibit those. Alongside with our relationship with parents, what about with our friends? Whom we associate with? You know it, I'm sure you've heard it many times, and the reason that you hear it so many times is because it is so true. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits or good morals. It does. Who you associate with, who you're around. Remember, develop good habits. If you're around people that have bad habits, evil, sinful habits, it's going to be very difficult for you to develop good habits when you're around that. Another one. And that is dating. Like every other aspect of life, every part of dating requires self-control. The person that we choose to go out with affects our reputation, can lead to temptation. And when we look around in our society and we look at dating in our society, it's completely the wrong model. It's completely the wrong image that we see around us in the world, on TV or otherwhere, just out in the world, and just having that influence, having that that knowledge of that image of the way dating and relationships are, it affects. We have to be on guard with that. We have to be able to step back from that and keep that at an arm's distance. That is not the correct relationship. That is not the way Christians should conduct themselves. Whatever we look at, we allow via books, television, computers, movies, whatever, self-control. The more I am around that, remember that hammer on the thumb, that instant when something comes out of your mouth? If you are constantly left cursing and swearing around you, then it'll happen in an instant. Philippians 4, verse 8, he tells us, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are good report, if there's any virtue, if anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things, on the good things. Surround yourself with people and relationships that will help you in what we're talking about. We're also, in the society, we're completely bombarded with the idea that it's undesirable, and that you're not worthy, you're a complete loser if you maintain your purity. And we see that so much in around us, in associations, that it's just commonplace to not maintain our purity. Just know this, that in Luke chapter 6, he says, blessed are you when what? Turn over there and look at it. Luke chapter 6, verse 22. Blessed are you, Jesus says, blessed are you when men hate you and ostracize you and insult you and scorn you for the sake of Son of Man. When that happens and you feel that pressure and you feel the insults coming at you and the tearing you down, you need to know at that point that you're doing the right thing. Okay? That Jesus says that is exactly what will happen. Verse 23, he says, be glad in that day, leap for joy, behold, your reward is great in heaven. It's worth it. It's worth it to maintain purity in our lives. We're designed, God designed us to bring about feelings for men and women, to bring about those feelings naturally. But when, before it's time, in our relationships, if we get too close to another before marriage, then many temptations will come up. And one of the things we talked about was being prepared. Prepare not to be in those situations. Being in groups, absolute fantastic thing. Now, at some point, when you get closer and you're thinking more seriously and long-term, and you think you might have found someone, then you've got to have time to talk with that person. But prepare for those situations so that temptation is as far away from you as possible. Okay? So that you won't get caught up in that. Don't expect to spontaneously find self-control in a moment of weakness, unless you have prepared, unless you're totally committed to that. Because in an instant, that desire can hit you and lose control. Prayer, studying, planning, all of those things to help avoid the situation. Hebrews 13, chapter, verse 4, marriage is honorable among all, the bed undefiled, But we need to know this, but fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. He gives us strict warnings. He knows these desires that are within us. He knows that. He put those in us. But He also says in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 18, to flee fornication. Just like Joseph. He was out of there. He was not going to stay around in that situation. He got out. Don't walk politely. If you're in that and it's there and you're confronted with it, get out. Don't be polite. Just get out. Say, I got to go. I'm out of here. All right? And finally, the last one is the relationship is in the marriage. When we finally get there, and we find someone and we're married, just a minute or so here. Husband's treatment of your wives. It's all about discipline, self-discipline. In fact, don't get married until you have a good measure of self-discipline and self-control. In a marriage, it's all about sacrifice and about sacrificing what I want for someone else. That's what marriage is all about. Doing everything for them, putting them first. If I don't have self-control and the discipline to do that, wait. Don't get involved with it. You'll compound. You'll have lots of trouble in your life. Same thing for the wives. Be ready for that. To sacrifice everything for your husband. To lift him up. To provide that, to be disciplined, and the sanctity of marriage, obviously forsaking everyone else for that one that you've chosen. Self-control, we can have a lot of knowledge, we can have and be very, very informed and know the Scriptures. But unless we can keep control of ourselves and maintain discipline in our lives, we'll look foolish, is really how we'll appear. You'll be a hypocrite. You say this, but you know, look at what you're doing. And you'll actually bring shame to the cause of Christ rather than building that up. The battle is yours. Where does your motivation come from? Where does your determination come from? Let that be from Christ, our greatest example, that and be determined and motivated that what He has done for me is worth a lifetime of discipline. It's worth it. Self-control, we talked about it affecting our spiritual lives, our financial lives, relationship. It's so, so important. Anybody have any questions? Any comments? All right, well, thank you for your attention. Do we have some, anything? Okay, we got 10 minutes. All right, 10 minutes, and we'll be back in here. Thank you for your attention.